Hello and welcome to the Vorthos cast. I'm Lorelei Weissel-Labrizzi.
I'm Chris Delano.
And I'm Carrie Thomas. And you're listening to this episode on Monday, April 8th when it comes out. It's looking like a sunny day. Oop, the sun just went away. That's right, we got a solar eclipse. This is our solar eclipse special, everybody.
Yeah.
What kind of solar eclipse content do we have?
I don't know, but it would be really good if we were still talking about murders at Karloff Manor, because that has like the very slightest bit of relevance to Little Shop of Horrors, and this set does not.
There are some pretty dangerous plants in this set.
Okay, the main villain of the set is not a plant lady who's murdering people with pollen, so.
I think if this they tacked true. Plant onto a cool, nobody would have cared. Nobody would have known the difference.
Scorpion, dragon, plant, whatever other types he has.
We're gonna finish talking about the main set story for Alice of Thunder Junction this week. So we'll still have the two epilogue stories to talk about. News. What news do we have? The video game with the vaults, Fallout, Secret Lairs were announced.
Commander decks for Thunder Junction.
All the Thunder Junction previews are finished. So you can go see all those cards for Hallows of Thunder Junction main set and the big score and the crimes bonus sheet and the special guests and
the commander decks decks. Special cards that come in the commander decks that have characters I don't know anything about.
The bounties.
Yeah.
Little multiplayer variant.
Adding a lot of names to spreadsheets for people with this.
For me and Jay. Yeah.
Well, for one person in particular, Jay.
No, I still have spreadsheets. Me and Jay have to compare spreadsheets only occasionally, but it's usually when one of us doesn't want to read something that's bad.
It's good to have two people maintaining that spreadsheet because, like, you never know when, like, the eclipse happens and one of you turns out to be some sort of alien and you disappear. It could happen.
I think both of us, I think we could both be aliens. That's the truth. Me and Jay are on similar wavelengths. But yeah, why didn't they do Plane Chase, huh? Why are we getting bounties? I want Plane Chase. That's all I want.
They gave so much Plane Chase last year.
Yeah, but they could still give more. They gave us Doctor Who Plane Chase, and I want Thunder Junction Plane Chase.
You know, that would have actually, Thunder Junction would have been the perfect set for that, since, you know, all the Omen Paths. All the Omen Paths.
It all takes place on Thunder Junction, though.
Yeah, but you could, like, fight through the Omen Paths. Like, imagine you're on a horse and you're chasing a guy and you go through an Omen Path and now you're, like, on a sky ruin in Zendikar. And then you're still, like, blasting at each other and riding horses. Just, you know, traveling through the plains.
Can you imagine, though, you just be like, man, my life sucks. I'm leaving my home. And you step through an Omen Path and you step out the other side and you're just like on top of a tiny little floating rock 30 miles above the surface of Zendikar.
And then it like closes behind you and you just have to like hang out there.
Or it's moving, which we know they can do.
Oh boy. I think that's all the real news.
Yeah. Go read the big story, the epilogue story, whatever they want to call it.
The epilogue story that everybody's talking about.
We're going to talk about it next week. It's a big deal, and we're not going to talk about it this week because it's too much to talk about in this episode. But we're definitely going to talk about it next week.
Yeah, our episode would be too thick if we talked about five stories instead of three. But speaking of things that are thick, who wants to tell us about the anti-flashback story, Blood is Thicker Than Venom? See, that's what we call a freaking segue. Hell yeah.
I want to talk about this one because I want to talk about how it's nice to have like a backstory to Annie. It's not her full backstory. We don't like go into like her childhood. We don't, you know, have the discovery moment of when she became an outlaw. But it does talk about her experiences on Thunder Junction. And I think it's a really good and important story to frame who she is and how she acts at the end of this arc. So Blood is Thicker Than Venom. It is written by a queer indigenous writer, H.E. Edgman. I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name there. E-D-G-M-O-N. Anyways, really cool to have this story. But essentially, it starts out with Annie in the bed of a very charming widower named Jordan or Joey or Jody or something. He's a local to Saddlebrush, which is a nearby town to where Annie lives. And he wants her to stay the night with him because, like, you know, sometimes you have a little bit of a hookup and then you're feeling your feelings and you're like, hey, let's just like cuddle. But Annie, she's not that sentimental type. And she says she has a home to take care of. So she leaves town, and as she's leaving, she sees like a shadow slither by out of the corner of her eye, and she's not quite sure what it is. And she decides it's not her problem. So she just, you know, heads on out of town. She gets home and we learn about her nephew, Tommy. He gets referenced a couple times in the main story, but he doesn't show up in the main story for reasons this side story explains. And he has to be taken care of because he is in chronic pain by some debilitating illness or poison or something. It's not made clear at the beginning of the story. But the point is, he has this chronic pain and he has to be treated by a medicine that is essentially blue smoke in a little bottle, a glass bottle. It's not really ever exactly explained what it is or what happened to him. But Annie blames herself for this whole situation, and she links it back to a job that they did with or for Akul. The story is not like interested in giving us that background, and I appreciate that about it. Because it's just about, you know, Annie taking care of Tommy. The next morning, she gets up and she finds a basket of goodies on her front porch. And she's assuming it's from the charming widower, Jody. Because, like, you know, he likes her. So maybe he left her, like, some little baked goods and some other goodies. She needs to pick up some more medicine for Tommy, though. So she goes to run into town. And she runs into Jody because it's a small town and, like, a arid desert location. Like, you know, people are just gonna hang out in the general store or on the streets. She's like, hey, you know, don't send me these baskets, thank you, but like, no thank you. And he says that it wasn't him, that it could have been anyone in town who did it for her, because turns out everyone in town knows about her situation with Tommy and they all care about her and they think that she's really cool and they like her and it's a good group of people. So they're having a little talk, but then suddenly a rattle worm, you know, the big like rattlesnake worm creature, slithers through town and it's terrifying. It could easily eat or kill anyone there. People are running away from it, but it ends up biting a young girl. Now, Annie realizes when she sees this that that shadow that she saw off in the distance that was like slithering by was definitely this rattle worm. And it's bitten this young girl. So she kind of blames herself for what happens here because she's got a complex with blaming herself for things happening to people. But, you know, that'll happen. So she tells the town, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to go kill this rattle worm. The young girl's brother, Bo, he's like also upset for not being able to help his sister. And he's, you know, a young guy. And he says that he's going to help her. And so she makes a plan and tells people to join her in the morning at her place. So in the next morning, Annie steps outside and finds not just Bo there, but like a whole bunch of other people from town. And Jody is there, too. And Annie's like, no, not at all. You're not coming with us. And he's like, no, I'm not coming with you. Jody's just there to see them off and like make sure they have supplies and that, you know, all that. And also, this Bo guy, Annie, like, leads the whole crew of them out, and Bo is just very endearing. He's very young. He doesn't really know a lot. He's just there to, you know, because he wants to avenge his sister's wounds and help the town. He gives, like, big Kellen vibes, and I really like him. It also, like, gives us a moment in the side story to see how Annie interacts with, you know, kind of young, foolhardy guys, and Kellen's not special in that way, I guess. She likes him the same way she likes Bo. Anyways, they go out and they find the rattlesnake's hideaway. They find like the nest where the rattlesnake lives. And Annie sees that it has a baby. And there's this theme throughout the story that no one can live alone. And she sort of realizes that like she can't live without Tommy. Tommy can't live without someone taking care of him. And this little baby rattle worm, it's not going to live without its mom. And so she decides that she's not going to kill the rattle worm. And instead, her and the townsfolk do this maneuver to lead the rattle worm away from the town and like further out into the wilds, where it will be able to, you know, hunt more appropriate food, probably like, you know, whatever these musk ox that are like covering Thunder Junction, wherever they're coming from. You know, she leads it out. When they return home, though, you know, sort of the evening time, Annie finds Tommy has like packed up all of his stuff and he's getting ready to leave. He's not taking his medicine, so he's got like a real clear head on his shoulders and he's obviously in pain. And Annie's like, what are you doing? Where are you going? You can't do this. And he says he's got to go home. And by home, he means he's leaving Thunder Junction, the plane, to return to the plane that they came from. The Ateen are like a nomadic traveling people, and they are on a plane somewhere that Jody wants to return to so that he can get some, quote, real medicine. Hopefully to like get actually cured of this and not just be treating it with the like magical pain medicine. This ends up leaving Annie alone. But she kind of reflects on the fact that this entire town now is her new family. And that's the end of her backstory. And I really liked it. It's a really lovely story. I like all the characters in this town that we meet very briefly. I think it's a really, really nice side story, backstory for Annie.
People in general seem to really like it. I saw a lot of folks say nice things about the story. And Annie in general is a character. I'm really happy to see a lot of people enjoy her. I think she's neat.
She's got big aunt energy. Talked about that in a previous episode. She's like definitely the coolest aunt at the family gatherings. She's got that like hardened outlaw feel to her, but also you can tell there's a soft spot. Yeah, it's just it's a good character for this setting.
Yeah, and actually looking out for other good people, which is, you know, the actual display for Thunder Junction, is a lot of these people are moving on here to have a second chance at being an asshole. So getting this in Yuma's story, where it's just like people actually moving on and making new lives here, pretty wholesale. Very good. Still passively curious about the whole Tommy Akul situation, but I know it's purposefully vague, so.
I'm like perfectly happy with not knowing the particulars. I think it's like, it's one of those things where like you can kind of piece together what happened, that like Annie probably got Tommy involved in some sort of job they were doing for Akul and they messed up or something went wrong and Akul, you know, poisoned Tommy. I don't need to know the particular details, but we get the emotional like impact of it. And that's what I think matters here. I do like that this story also focuses, like you were mentioning, like a lot of people come to Thunder Junction to do kind of like dastardly things, you know. It's been marketed as the villain plane for a reason. There's a lot of villainous people here. I mean, we've got like Olivia and Gonti running around. So like a lot of people are here to do bad things, but then there are people who come here to like start a new life after horrible things happen on their home plane. I think it's mentioned that like Jody left his his wife died and he left her behind, you know, he didn't leave her behind. He left his dead wife. This is not phrasing correctly. His wife died and he left. All right. and he left that life behind because, you know, he didn't like he wanted a new start. And it's like Bo and his sister and their parents both came. They all came to Thunder Junction to get a fresh start in their life after the absolute horror of the Phyrexian invasion. And I think that, like, honestly, if I was in the situation of the multiverse and I had suffered through the Phyrexian invasion and survived, I too would be like, I'm going to get off this plane. Like, I'm going to go somewhere that seems mostly untouched by this and, well, like, get away.
especially if the fact is getting out that nowhere is safe from interplanar visitors, then it's kind of a free-for-all. Like, you're not technically worse off on Innistrad versus Kamigawa versus Thunder Junction. Like, Thunder Junction has its attractions and everything, but yeah, you're not. People can still move between these worlds, people with ill intentions. So
you might as well go to the one that's like where you have the most self-determination available, right? Like, you go to Thunder Junction and it's like you're not going to get, you know, hassled by some demonic mob boss or like roped into some sort of like cyber crime ring. You can go to Thunder Junction and just like raise some oxen and like hang out at a saloon, you know.
I mean, until you like walk through an omen path and end up in Bloomboro, and then you get picked up by a hawk immediately. Like,
God, just imagine you're like get on Bloomboro and you're this cute little mouse and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go lay in a dewdrop, and then you just get snatched up by a hawk.
Like,
it's just over.
It is a lottery for these people, but everything seems more or less fair game at this point. So find community where they want to. Do y'all want to hop back to the main story?
Yeah, we know a little bit about Annie now, so we can appreciate her more.
Yeah. Episode 5, High Moon. Not High Noon. I made that typo already. it is nighttime. So everybody got caught. They weren't exactly the best at this. Kellen has agreed to his duel with Akul. The captives are walked out to where Kellen is waiting. Annie shouts a warning to Kellen, basically like, as soon as you're able to, just fly away. Forget about us. Get yourself safe. Which is pretty altruistic message to give out to the kid. But Kellen is ready to fight, and he's perfectly fine with whatever the stakes of this fight are, like whoever draws first blood or whatever. It does turn out that it's a fight to the death, so he's a little bit astonished by that. He is new to this whole outlaw way. So Akul comes out, Kellen begins the battle, he manifests a spear and tosses it at Akul, and it bounces off his scales, does absolutely nothing. Akul kind of exposes a ball of thunder magic that is in his throat and then swallows it, and Kellen knows about thunder magic and knows how potent it is and realizes just how deep he's gotten himself into this situation. He's desperate. He feels a surge of magic go through him, and he tries to focus on that. And then Akul is stunned. Kellen is amazed by the fact that Akul is now in this kind of dazed trance thanks to a new manifestation of his fey magic. Awesome. Except that his amazement kind of distracts him from holding this, and so Akul does snap out of his trance that he was put into. He decides that he's had enough of entertaining this fight and moves in to end this thing once and for all. But as he approaches, he is blasted by thunder, and it turns out Raoul Zarek is there with mercenaries by his side at the top of a hill, and they are ready to fight it out and kind of indirectly save Kellen from this arena death match. The Hellspurs versus the Sterling Company, and chaos breaks loose in the arena. Oko is not too concerned while this all is happening, or doesn't seem to be that concerned. Kellen is freed from his battle, and Oko and the crew are preparing their escape, and Oko asks Kellen for the key. The key being the one that was around Akul's neck. Kellen is confused for a second, but then he realizes that it had been blasted off of his neck. Kellen grabs the key, gets it to Oko, But then Kellen is caught in a little bit of a crossfire. A rifle shot hits near him, tumbles some rocks. He's separated from the group, and then he is knocked unconscious by Sterling thugs, while Oko and the rest of everybody successfully move out of the arena and make it back to the saloon.
When Oko's like, suck to suck, kid. Skill challenge, whatever.
Yeah, and Kellen's kind of like,
skill issue.
There we go. I'm not cool and hip.
Kellen is like, sure, they're definitely going to grab me. And then gets hit a second time across the back of the head and goes unconscious. So, yeah, not exactly in with the crew quite yet. When they make it to safety at the saloon, Annie and the rest of the group, Annie says that they should go get Kellen and prioritize that, because she's obviously got the interest of the child at heart. Or the young man. We don't know his exact age, but he's at least adult-ish on the borderline. Oko says that they have basically one chance to get into the vault. That this was all part of his plan to get caught, to get the remaining key. And his crew is pissed at him for that fact. He had brought Kellen along to get them caught so that he would have an opportunity for this. And they agree reluctantly to go unlock the vault. But Oko says that he will go recover Kellen once this job is finished. Meanwhile, Kellen wakes up in a carriage and sees Raoul Zarek, who was working with the Sterling Company. And Raoul believes in the good in people, and especially Kellen in this case, and says that he thinks they're on the same team. Kellen is fresh off of another Oko betrayal. Raoul explains his plan that he wants the vault to remain sealed. He is not interested in anybody getting to the power within it. Kellen has been betrayed, so he decides to make an alliance with Raoul Zarek. And that is where we end off episode 5.
I can't believe Oko would just betray his son like that.
His son,
what?
Who is...
what a surprise!
So critical to the plan.
I mean, like, I remember when episode 4 came out, a lot of people were like, Oko would never be so stupid to take, like, this kid with him. Like, Oko, you know, like, that was surefire way for them to get caught. And I was just like, I think that was the point. Like,
yes.
Like, I was like, I feel like it's pretty clear, even in episode 4, that, like, Oko is just using Kellen this entire story. He's a bad dad. Just not, also not the greatest thief in the multiverse, for sure.
No, and I'm not sure what his plan was if the lulling magic didn't manifest itself pretty quickly in Kellen in that moment. So
he did have Tiny Bones with him, so like that was there to help, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Oko happening to just luck into saving himself, I guess, by throwing his kid under the bus or the, you know, dragon scorpion rogue. God, Ackle has like a really, really, really tiny text type line.
He's got all the types you need.
But no, episode 5 was cool. It was fun. I liked it. I like the suspenseful ending where Raoul is just like, hey, Kaya would kill me if I let anything happen to you. So
yeah, Raoul and Annie are clearly the people looking out for Kellen in this moment. And otherwise, like, where would he actually be at? Probably dead, or worse than dead, but gotta keep the hope alive.
He's got his cool aunt and his gunkle, all right? He's good. It takes a village to raise a child. All right, Lorelai, do you want to tell us about episode 6 so we can talk about the big finale and the twist? Because it's good. It's good.
Wait, there's a twist? Yeah.
Yeah, have you read episode 6 yet?
Not quite yet.
Yeah.
Guess I'll hear about it.
We actually jump forward in time to the 1950s and they go to a sock hop and do the twist.
Oh.
Spoiler alert. Sorry, that's at the end of the story. We're not there yet. So episode 6, The Ballad of Thieves and Thunderslingers. So the crew gets on top of the vault, which is kind of on this floating platform thingy above Tarnation. And it turns out you don't just walk up to it and put the key in a door and go right in like you're at the bank or something. It's all booby-trapped. And so they do the whole, like, laser alarm.
It's not lasers, system. It's lights, right?
It's light. Okay. But it's laser.
Yes.
But it, you know, the trope space is the laser grid. And the only way to shut it off is to pull two levers simultaneously. And unfortunately, this is not D&D, so you can't just do it with mage hand. Satoru takes out a little origami dragonfly drone to kind of determine where a pathway is through all these light beams, and to have Tiny Bones follow. Phenomenal sequence of Tiny Bones, like, disassembling himself and reassembling himself and just being a weird little skeleton man. And just Tiny Bones is like the minor character all-star of the set, I think. Which he deserves to be. And it's great. They successfully disable the light grid alarm. But this isn't the bank. You don't just walk up to the door now and put the key in and get your loot. There's this like powerful magical ward around the door that Kervec can disable, but will take time. And they start running out of time because they never actually killed Ackle and the Hellspurs, who have now caught up to them and are blocking their exit and pinning them inside the entrance to this vault and start shooting. Kervec, you know, they mount the Oko's gang mounts a defense, and Kervec does bring down the ward, but the only Oko and Raska enter that doorway to get to like the main vault door. So Oko has like the full finished key, but Kellen uses his fairy lassos to round him up, and Ral and Kellen face down Raska and Oko, and we get our kind of three-way standoff that some very excellent podcasters previewed the Story Spotlight card for recently.
Who was that?
Doesn't matter, they're not important. You probably wouldn't have heard of them. It's a little show called The Vorthos Cast. But yeah, we get our classic Good, the Bad, and the Ugly showdown outside the vault door. Kellen and Oko are fighting, and then Annie shows up to kind of protect Kellen, because she's at this point made her priorities pretty clear. She cares about Kellen's safety and very little else. And Kellen uses his magic, his like newfound fey magic, to kind of soften Oko's mind and grab the key. It looks like he's actually successfully gotten the upper hand on his father. And then his own mind starts having problems, but it's not Oko doing fey magic in retaliation, because Ashiok has showed up.
Nightmare.
Famous telepathic Ashiok. Yeah.
Well, it's getting touched by the nightmares.
Yeah.
To be fair, Ashiok is like, it's not a telepath. They've joined forces with Raska, and all of a sudden the tide of this showdown is shifting. And Oko manages to break free of Kellen's spell and open the vault. Ashiok and Raska also enter the vault with Oko, and then they do the twist, because this is the sock hop part. No, the illusion drops. This is not Ashiok. And it has not been Ashiok the whole time they've been on Thunder Junction. And Jace Beleren takes out the little microphone and says, I've been here the whole time. Because it's actually an episode of Game Changer.
He's certainly changing the game here.
And so inside the vault is like really freaky, weird technology. And there's a little pod with some kind of little creature in it. And Jace opens it up and takes the creature out. We know this creature as loot, you know, because he's loot. He's the treasure Jace and Vraskar are after. But do you understand that, like, he's the loot? Everyone's like, yeah, we're going to go find loot in the vault. And loot is this child.
And the child says the rest of this is trash. Then they get to take the rest of the treasure out.
But the baby's name is Loot.
Yeah, the baby's... baby's name is Loot.
He's very adorable. And so Jace kind of lulls him to sleep. Oko is not very happy with any of this. Because he's like, first of all, you tricked me, and that's rude and not fair. I'm the trickster here. And also, what do you mean this whole thing was for this little fur baby? Who cares about that? I want money. And then we have this little moment, because Annie Flash has a magical eye that can see through illusions. And the Jace Beleren in front of them, even though the Ashiok disguise is dropped, is still holding up an illusion. And Annie is able to see underneath that Jace is still scarred and has mechanical plugs sticking out of his skin, and that he is not looking great. And then this is unfortunate because it means there might actually have been consequences to March of the Machine.
Unclear. We'll find out next week.
And Jace sends Annie to sleep, and Vraska starts to petrify Oko, who uses the last bit of his focus to planeswalk away. And I'm sure he's fine.
You can always hit the bricks, you know? You can just leave.
Oh, no, well, he's becoming a brick, actually. So here's the problem is this huge fight has been happening in the vault, and this vault that has been inert here for, what's his name? Karavek is to be trusted over 10,000 years, at least. So this whole rock formation is collapsing around them. So they need to get the hell out. Because the vault starts also ascending into the air while the rocks all collapse. And so everybody flees in their own various ways. And then right when it seems like Kellen and Annie are clear, and Raoul, and all the people we actually care about who are good and pure in this world, Ackle like leaps out of the crumbling rubble and grabs Annie and threatens to drag them all back into this to their deaths. And then Kellen kind of surrounds Ackle in a sphere of golden energy and uses his fey charms to be like, hey, no, let us go, and then go back over there and just stay there for a while. And so Ackle gets charmed and turns back and is never heard from again, at least not in this story. I don't know about it in the future of magic or what's going to happen with that, but that's kind of his exit from the story.
I would say getting like a building dropped on you is a good way to like be certain you're dead, but you know, Nahiri is still alive, so Ackle could still be alive.
Well, it's complicated.
It's complicated.
It didn't turn out too well for Atraxa, though. It's a coin flip, really.
The key is having a Johnny there, I think.
The key is having, having red in your mana pie and your color identity might be what saves you, so Ackle might be okay. The one difference between Nahiri and Atraxa. The only one.
We'll see if we ever return to Thunder Junction. Oko reappears at the saloon because he's a shapeshifter. He was able to, like, shapeshift his way out of becoming fully petrified. So he's back at like the saloon hideout, and the rest of the gang is there, except Kellen and Annie, obviously. And they're all like, hey, this is a disaster, and we ended up not getting paid. But there's so much treasure out there, and we did work really good as a team. And vengeance is sweet. So maybe we'll keep doing crimes together. And that's the last we hear of the gang.
Also worth mentioning, Malcolm and Breeches are not there because their loyalty was to the Gorgon.
So. Yes, but spoilers for that for a bit. And the vault does eventually crash back down, as we learn in the big score. Ral and Kellen are hanging out with Annie. And Ral is like, hey, there's jobs on Ravnica. And Kellen is like, no, because my girlfriend is showing up. And Amalia shows up on a horse with a parasol and a fancy dress. And she and Kellen just get to hang out on Thunder Junction while they sort out a lot of complicated older teenager feelings.
Some difficult relationship dynamics here.
Well, I mean, and also Kellen just went through, gestures wildly, all that, and has a lot to figure out about his own future. And so then I guess they don't ride off into the sunset, but the sun sets on the story. And they, that's kind of the end of our little Western tale. Or is it? Dun, dun, dun. We'll have two more stories next week.
Yeah. So let's just talk about the things that are not related to those two stories. So, like, I'm not going to talk Vraska or Jace here, because spoiler for those two stories, they're Vraska Jace stories. But I love Kellen. I'm glad that we are putting him somewhere safe for a little while. We're just putting him down for a little bit. And I like that. So I'm glad he got to have his whole arc, and now we're just kind of like dropping him on a little farmstead with Annie, and he gets to live out a little farm boy life for some however long he wants, really. Date his like vampire girlfriend, hang out with his cool aunt, maybe like share some pie with his gunkle and have a good time. That's good for him.
Well, it's funny because we know Gunkle Ral is going to Bloomborough next set and is going to become an otter.
he already was.
So we don't know where Ral's story goes from here, but it's probably not going to be occasionally sharing pie with Kellen.
Yeah, I'm happy. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what do we think overall about Kellen's arc? Because like this is presumably the end of his arc. Like,
do you know how many people I have seen praising for him being, quote, I think significantly insignificant, where it's just like it didn't feel overbearing as a main character for a year of magic. It felt correct moderation wise to have him more or less sidelined in Lost Caverns of Ixalan and then not as main of a role in Murders at Karlov Manor, but you still got to see it through. Like, for the people who cared about Kellen, they could opt into caring about Kellen. And for the people who only cared about guild leaders or what's inside of Ixalan or the multitudes of villains on Thunder Junction, they still have stories for them. They have pretty much more than half of the story going for them at those times. But yeah, it's nice. It's nice that they struck that balance pretty well. People were pushing back against everybody. People were pushing against people who were saying that everybody hates Kellen and basically saying, that's your opinion. That's not the popular opinion. A lot of people were indifferent to him. Obviously not the most knocked out of the park character for, I think, everybody to like this character. But I think that requires a lot more work, and for being a brand new entry into Magic's roster and being immediately thrusted to main character status, people don't hate him, which is good. like that is an achievement in itself, that people are not being wholly obnoxious all the time, making up Jace Watch level terms to make fun of the character. It is just like, no, there can be a main character, but it's not so over the head that people are revolting against it.
I think it was a good lesson learned from the Gay Watch era, from roughly Battle for Zendikar to War of the Spark, of how to balance shifting characters over a year. I also just like that Kellen gets to be a good boy, and that never gets compromised. You know, Magic has had a lot of struggles depicting morally stalwart characters, traditional hero archetypes. And Kellen just gets to be a good kid. And he has so many opportunities where he could not be a good kid. But a big part of where his arc takes him is that at the end of the day, the things he's looking for externally are less important than his own internal conception of what he wants from himself. That is like one of the big things that is established at the end of Eldraine is, hey, he wants to be a hero, and he hopes that his dad was a hero. He hopes that he inherited that. So, and it was so funny.
Yeah.
He
does get to talk about that mythological version of his dad at the end of the story.
I really, once you know that Oko is his father, like, it's really important to go back and read the Eldraine story from the beginning, and listen to how Kellen theorizes about his dad, because it's really funny in you know, in an ironic sense of, oh lordy, you have no idea what's coming. you little darling angel boy. I guess fairy boy, not angel boy. Angel metaphorically. Fairy boy, literally. And then in Thunder Junction, we get to see like the dissonance of what he wanted his father to be and what his father actually is. And in the face of all that dissonance, he has a lot of complicated emotions. He has a lot of anger and disappointment and regret, but that does not shake the core of his moral character. And I really love that about him. I think that is like one of the most likable things about Kellen, is like how clear of an understanding he has about who he is, even if he doesn't realize it. And that, seeing that get reified in this set is really nice.
Yeah. I agree. I think just to bring it back a little bit to talk on like a broader meta thing, like you said, with this being successful where a lot of the Gatewatch problems failed. I think that like Magic fans do not like being told who the main character is. A lot of like the early pushback to Kellen was like essentially people saying, I don't want to be told who the main character is of Magic. But I think that part of the success of the Gatewatch, and I think what is successful about Kellen, is the fact that, like, I do actually think Magic players want a main character of some kind in the story. Even if it's not like an individual person, having it is, I think, really important for the success of Magic story to have some sort of narrative through line that people can easily follow. And sometimes that's a character, sometimes it's a group of characters. And I think Kellen is a good indication that, like, it can be one person for a little while. So like we had the Gatewatch, which was a great thing to follow. And however people want to talk about it, like, I think it was really successful in getting people really invested in Magic, Magic story in ways that they weren't before. And I think Kellen is also going to be looked back on and be like, hey, this was like a really successful thing they did to get people interested in Magic story. And even if they're not like tracing it back directly to Kellen, even if people aren't saying like, oh, I got involved because of Kellen, I think a part of what makes the like year of stories we've had really, really good is that we had Kellen. We had some sort of unifying thing pulling them together that you could follow and pretty easily like find a thread to attach yourself to pull yourself through all the stories. So even if like you really didn't care for Cowboy World, you still really wanted to know what happened with Kellen because you got interested in the fairy tale world and you went into Mesoamerican dinosaur world and you were just like, hey, I've now invested so much time in this little kid. I want to know how it ends. And I think that's I think it's very clever. I'm glad that they did that. If this was like an experiment, I think it was successful.
Yeah, and I think one of the important things is the way the Omen Path era lets magic tell stories. Because we get a lot of other returning characters too. Most of the characters in Thunder Junction are characters we have met in the last year or two. And most of them are not planeswalkers. And so like one of the problems with Gatewatch era is that if you want recurring characters through your narrative, they have to be planeswalkers. Which leaves no space for local characters to get stories that are like integrated to the planes. You know, in Eldraine, we have a very Eldraine focused story following planebound characters. Mostly Ashiok is there for a little bit, but like Rowan and Will are former planeswalkers who we've spent a lot of planeswalker time with. So like, I think they were a good transitional space. But then like we get to Ixalan, and everything on Ixalan is very local. It's a local story, but Kellen still gets to be a little through line. You know, Quintorius is here from Strixhaven. And so it's not like we don't have a planeswalker representative there. You know, same thing with Ravnica. It's mostly Ravnikans, but Kellen is here in a greater capacity. Kaya is back. And in this set, we just like Oko is obviously the planeswalker character, but like everybody's new here to Thunder Junction. And we like had Malcolm and Breaches in Ixalan, and we had Raska and Jace in All Will Be One and March of the Machines last year. And you know, Rao was there for a tiny little bit at the end of Mergers at Karlorf Manor. And so it's just the way that cast can build on itself, where everybody doesn't have to be there all the time, but everybody was here before at some point recently, quote unquote, recently in the past 2 years. I like that this being the first Omen Path arc really gets to utilize that feature of this metaphysical change.
Yeah. I'll also say, like, my heart goes out to all the people who really, really wanted to see like a full cycle of Kellen cards, because it was like a really dumb idea, but like you said it so loudly that I couldn't avoid myself, like I couldn't keep myself from hearing it, and it's so bad. He was never gonna turn blue black, never. So get over it.
Yeah, this is to say, I think the magic designers, everyone says like, oh, they only design for Commander, or a lot of like, oh, it's all Commander cards now. I feel like the fact that they did not print a version of Kellen where you can play all of the Kellen cards shows that like, yeah, maybe they're all like often designing around Commander, but like they're not gonna just like give you a Kellen.
Characters.
Yeah, they're not gonna put a red mana activation cost on this new Bant Kellen just so you can play the first Kellen in his deck, you know? Yeah. Like they're not gonna do that just for purposes of like giving you a Commander where you can play all the Kellens. And so I appreciate that. I'm thankful for that, because I think that I want to see cards that are designed to be good and fun cards reflective of the character, not cards designed to like say, oh, well, Joda has to be five colors so that you can play the Jodas together. Like that's, yeah.
No, it felt very good to get to the end of this and not be burnt out on Kellen. And honestly, like, I know we'll get around to this because it does tie a little bit into the epilogue stories, but really the information is kind of isolated to what we've learned from Lost Caverns of Ixalan to present. The Fomori tease, excellent. Like this, I don't know if it's the end of the 3-year arc. I don't know if it's year 2's finale, I just know that it's a thing that exists, and they have threaded in a correct amount of information with each set to keep people like guessing, but also not too in the know about it. And I'm sure everything will be revealed at some point. We'll get like a full history breakdown or whatever. But for right now, this feels way, way better at weaving the threads than the new era Magic Origins to War of the Spark did. A lot of that stuff was like, you got one piece of information and then you get to War of the Spark and you're like, how does any of this work? Like, oh, there's an elder spell. We didn't know about that. And the Eternals are able to use the elder spell to grab Spark. And it's like, I feel the stuff coming together with this in a much more organized fashion, almost as if it's in one group's hand consistently throughout the story arc.
Yeah, I wish the elder spell was teased somewhere earlier, like in Dominaria, where almost nothing for the arc was teased. So
yeah, it was just a very, very
preview card. Excuse you, the most important tease, the preview card for the Vorthos cast.
Oh yeah, but, everybody loves it. But the it's a very, very deliberate and obviously positive reception to it, because people are nonstop talking about the Fomori, asking, is this really all we know about the Fomori? And I'm like, yep. And we're going to find out more eventually. Yeah. But I'm in no rush, because it feels like it's actually leading up to some kind of reveal where all the puzzle pieces will land into place, rather than these are the loose threads. You never could have guessed the ending to this. And maybe everything doesn't need to be guessable, but like, that's part of the fun of the fandom, is being able to look at the pieces of this empire and try to put it all back together.
So one of the things that I have seen with the Fomori, especially in this set, now that we have like a few more thoughts about it over Lost Caverns of Ixalan, is this is the first time since Magic Origins where Magic actually has a new set of plot threads, and like small, tiny, almost microscopic asterisk, because the Fomori technically existed before all this, but like, we've had maybe five sentences max about them. It's nothing.
Yeah,
they're nothing, and there's not a thing anybody would have expected to have been followed up on or experimented with. And so it really feels like we're in novel space where, you know, previous to this, we had the Eldrazi, Nicol Bolas, Phyrexia. That was literally all just tying up loose ends that Brady Dalmermuth seeded like 15 years ago. and so it finally feels like we're free of all that. God, and even Garak got cured, and Liliana doesn't have the chain veil, and like, it just feels like so much of like the slog of that era, like all those footballs that got thrown up into the air, have finally been caught, and we can finally move on and do something new. That's what this feels like, this past year has felt like to me. And the way I see people speculating about the Fomori, speculating about Jason Vraska things, which we'll talk about more next week, it really feels like the earlier days of the Bolas arc, where people like Lorelei Weisel-Labrizzi and Kerry Thomas and Jay Anelli were posting fan theories and like making MS Paint mock-up images of things and writing articles speculating
about
things.
Most of which were incorrect, but
we got some good hits, and everyone likes to throw the Binding Sigil on the Immortal Sun on Ixalan, me saying it wasn't Azorius related. I said there was no evidence that it was Azorius related. It's by it's more closely related to Ugin, but if this story establishes that Azor and Ugin knew each other, then yes, I will agree, and that's what the story did. So I was right. Nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about how I was still right.
I'm fine being wrong because, a thousand times. I've had a few good hits, you know. I can keep pumping out wrong theories.
I'm going to admit to when the binding sigil was shown, I was like, yeah, this has probably got something to do with Azor. And then I also was like, but also Faraz. And I had like an entire rant about Faraz being involved in that.
That's my level of theorizing.
But speaking of plot threads, one thing I do appreciate is that part of, I think, the problem with like the 15 years of plot threads that we had to like wrap up over the course of like the Eldrazi, Bolas, and the Phyrexians, all of that getting wrapped up was great, but also like with Wilds of Eldraine up to now, we have been seeing little plot hooks that have been like put in the story places for like, this could be a future problem, this could be a thing, but like none of them have been like multiplanar apocalyptic, which is nice. Here's a plot thread on Eldraine. Rowan is off doing some wild stuff. She could be a character in a future plot line, but like she's not going to go blow up all of the multiverse, probably. Or like, here's a little plot hook from Ixalan. What's going to happen with the Myco Tyrant or Aklazots and stuff? And it's like, cool, we can pick that up later, but it's not going to be like a plot thread of like, oh, we left the Phyrexians on New Phyrexia with like a potential planar portal. Let's just see what happens later. So it doesn't feel pressing to answer them. Like, if we never go back to Eldraine somehow and we never learn about what Rowan does, like no one's going to be sitting there going, there's still a Rowan in the multiverse who could blow everything up.
So one of the things that I like about Omen Paths is answering those plot threads doesn't require us to go back to Eldraine. Rowan could, like, you know, theoretically, the Myco Tyrant or Rowan or something else could show up somewhere else. Because, like, that was one of the big problems, is that if you wanted to continue the Eldrazi, you had to go back to Zendikar. And Zendikar had to be about the Eldrazi. And then they split them off into Innistrad too, which was fun. Like, it was genuinely fun that, like, hey, by the way, we're only killing two of the three Titans. Where's the third? And then the immediate payoff was a little disappointing. I still think they should have waited on Emrakul. But also they had no time to wait on Emrakul because they had to get to Bolas. And this is what happens when that's one of the problems of that storytelling era is catching all those footballs is really hard and complicated, and you have to do things really fast
because they're not footballs, they're nuclear warheads, and you can't just like leave a nuclear warhead dangling over the plot forever because it gets like really annoying when it's like, oh, we have to address the Eldrazi or we have to address the Phyrexians, because if we don't,
the Myco Tyrant isn't going to immediately result in the destruction of the multiverse, but lordy, it could really mess up a plane full of people that we care about, or like show up on Bloomborough and like turn all the cute little bunnies and stuff into mushroom slaves.
Yeah.
That's still bad. The stakes don't always have to be major character death and multiversal distraction. And I think this past year has done a really good job at bringing a lot of the stakes down to smaller scope. Through character, and that's one of the things I like about Kellen. Anyway, this is probably where we should wrap the episode.
Yeah, we can talk for a very long time about this. It's
because we're gonna have more time to talk about this specific thing next week.
We're rapidly approaching the point where it's just three friends sitting in a hotel room talking about magic lore instead of a podcast. So we should wrap
is
it
that
up.
Not is that not the essence of the podcast though?
That's true.
So final thoughts. My final thought this week. What is my final thought this week? I have a couple options. And I think what I'm going to go with is if you are not yet watching Dungeon Meshi, the second core just started. Delicious in Dungeon on Netflix. The second core just started. Although, if you don't want to wait for the anime, The manga is only 97 chapters. It's really, really, really excellent. You can just go read it and not have to wait for the anime to finish. But the second court just started, which I'm very excited for because there are some very good, big, excellent reveals and very excellent character moments. The Yuri gets even better. I like Dungeon Meshi. Tade's here now. She doesn't do a lot in this comic, but I like her. Watch Dungeon Meshi.
I've still only watched one episode of it. I don't watch a lot of coward. TV. I know I'm a coward. Also, I just don't watch a lot of TV unless it's Game Changer or various other shows on Dropout, which, you know what? I was going to use my final thought to talk about how much fun I've been having playing Helldivers 2. Just an excellent, fun, very fun game. Find a friend, play it with a friend. It's just some of the funniest things that have ever happened in a video game. But instead of talking about that, which I just did, I am instead going to say that my final thought is, Dropout is just still worth it. Like, still one of the best.
$6.
Yeah, it's like one of the best streaming platforms. It's pretty incredible. It's so funny. Everything they do is great. I don't think there's anything on there that I just don't like watching. I watch everything. It's just worth it. It's so worth it. I think there's like, when this episode releases, there should be a new episode of Game Changers premiering tonight. So, like, go watch it. Game Changer. Very good. Very fun.
Carrie, final thought.
My final thought is, if you want to get back into Destiny, don't do it when this episode goes live. Wait like a day and then get back into Destiny. And then you can get this Thunder God package thing that just gets you up to power level-ish. And then you're kind of set. If you want to play the story finale there, the final shape, I guess that's a thing. But yeah, they finally made the new player onboarding for Destiny not quite as abysmal as it had been before, which was an improvement over a truly abysmal startup experience when I had first joined. Now all three of us can bully Jay into playing Destiny. And
yeah,
and we have four people, so that's enough for Gambit, as long as you guys are up for that.
I've been waiting for a new content update because I miss Destiny and I want to play it, but I also like,
I'm trying so hard not to burn myself out right before
Tuesday, April 9th. New is the Into the Light content update leading up to the final shape. We got There's so much new stuff.
There's a wave based mode. There is a whole bunch of stuff that I'll be trying out. I'm gonna try not to burn myself out on it, like I said before the finale, because I want to have a lot of energy going into the final shape.
Hey, and if you were a big fan of the epilogue stories that we're going to talk about next week, written by someone named Allison Lurs, turns out that person is also the narrative lead for the final shape. So, or working narrative. She's very much involved in the narrative of the final shape for Destiny. So, yeah, good stuff is ahead.
Good stuff is ahead. Destiny was one of the things on my list of potential final thought things. But God, I love Destiny. I say having been extremely tilted this week in Iron Banner so far, but shh.
Oh, I can't play Iron Banner anymore. I'm a Witherhorde special main. It's not worth it. Like, they ruined the game for me. I just wanted to put Witherhorde pools everywhere. That's all.
But Tusk of the Boar. We have our Strand Waveframe Grenade Launcher, Tusk of the Boar. I'm a loot goblin, so... Yeah, patreon.com/thevorthoscast. You can support us, get on our Discord, live listen to the podcast, chat with other Vorthoses. Yay! I'm keeping that short because this is a long episode. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Vorthoscast.